Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 4.19, where we unleash the Beecher. Couple weekends ago, you got a credential and sat with me, and we got to kind of watch through the Ohio State series games together. And you were not there this weekend, but I got the Spartan version of you sitting next to me this weekend as they placed the WCBN of East Lansing in the seats that I normally sit in. So I had to move down one next to all the daily guys, which meant they all moved down one, which was kind of weird. It's maybe no one wants to sit next to me, but so I got like a play by play of a guy sitting next to me. He was pretty good. Like I talked to him a couple of times. He was a pretty decent guy and not like a guy who thought that Michigan State should somehow upset Michigan this weekend or, you know, one of those kinds of guys. But so it was just an interesting experience because you're sitting there in the press box and you're getting an earful of play-by-play, which was really helpful on Saturday as I'm like writing during the game and all of a sudden I can just hear what's going on. And so if he starts getting excited or something happens, I can look up and check out what's going on. But it was almost like having the game on in the background. Have you had any interactions with the student radio guys from Michigan State in all of your crossoverness?
Yeah. I mean, when you go to MSU for football, which I only did once, you get sat on a photo deck under under the press box. And so the table they give for opposing student radio is just pretty close to the one they give for Impact, which is the name of their student radio.
Ah, okay.
And then we were close to Impact at Breslin too. We make, if you do games against them, you're going to be pretty close. And at the Big House, we get our booth and then they are at a folding table just outside our booth in the like photo well. So yeah, I mean, they're pretty professional in general. I don't know, what were they wearing? Was the guy in a suit?
Yeah, they were in suits, and then they normally had a third guy in a suit.
Normally, they come in suits. And the thing about Impact is that their station is actually listened to by people under the age of 50. And the WCBN radio audience is the people that listen to CBN, you know, like over 88.3, not talking about YouTube, but actually the FM airwaves are all like basically Craig Ross. They're all older and they're all like have lived in Ann Arbor for 40 or 50 years. That's nobody under the age of like 35 has ever listened to WCBN just in the car on 88.3. Whereas Impact actually is like pretty popular with college students and like people actually listen to it.
Do they do like other shows that are like attractive to younger audiences? Also, do younger audiences even listen to the radio?
Well, they do in East Lansing. Yeah. Yeah, Impact has more kids, especially for the music side. Like that's WCBN's problem is they don't have that many student DJs. So they have to get a lot of townies to do shows. And then those shows, you know, are then listened to by townies. And that's kind of just how it goes. There's
the Venn diagram of townie music and student music probably doesn't overlap a whole lot.
There's not a ton of 19-year-olds listening to the Drive Time Polka Hour on WCBN 88.3 in Ann Arbor. So, but no, the Impact guys, and they have a website that's pretty well run. Like they have a lot of writing side to their organization. So, you know, they're very professional, and I've never had any sort of bad experiences with those guys.
No, these guys are nice people. And he talked to me for a while and his partners would too. They came up and asked me and they saw I had the Notre Dame Wisconsin game on my tablet. And they're like, oh, what's going on? And so they seem like decent fellas. And the guy actually apologized to me for being so loud. He's like, I'm not actually trying to be loud. I just get excited when I do hockey. And I was like, no, I appreciate that. Like I can appreciate the Dick Vitaleness of when you get into games, and it's better than having somebody who's like falling asleep on the radio.
Who took a bigger L this weekend? The Impact guys who drove like an hour to 90 minutes to Ann Arbor twice to watch their team lose 12-1 cumulatively, or the people that paid like $25,000 to go to the Duke game to then watch Coach K lose his last ever game.
I mean, can you enjoy losses? Like, I was at the 1-2 Michigan game in 06, Michigan Ohio State game in 06. What do we call it? We call it Football Armageddon. I was at that game and people are like, oh, that's like one of the best games ever played or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I don't know.
Even though
I wouldn't say it's enjoyable.
Even though Duke was more competitive, anybody that paid to get into that stadium probably took a bigger L because they also saw their team lose, but they lost lots of money doing it. So I think those Duke fans are the ones who took the worst L this week.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are doing like their job and it's going to potentially something they can take to future employers, right? Like to tell someone I spent 25 grand to watch my team lose a basketball game is like, I mean, I've spent some money to go to Ohio State and to bowl games, but I haven't spent 25 grand. and so instead of there, you were fondueing, which is, I don't know. We've had one of our constant listeners, Will, is dying on the hill that we need to do a wine tasting on air someday. And I feel like you going and fondueing is not far away from that.
Yeah, I mean,
it's cheese.
I was in the D.C. area. I was at the Melting Pot on Friday night, which I was happy about because I always enjoyed the Melting Pot in Ann Arbor. That went out, I don't know, like 8 years ago. Long time, but I always enjoyed it in Ann Arbor. I'm a big fan of fondue. It does take a long time. You know, there are some downsides to it. It's also an expensive restaurant. It's not like a place you go every week, but I hadn't been in 3 years. So it was a good time. And, you know, I did plan that trip a few weeks ago with the hope that Michigan would have the bye in the Big Ten tournament, would not be playing at all. But they played Michigan State, which was basically a bye.
Yeah. Which is why we are talking about other things, because we can only say he scores too many times, a few times. But did you get to fondue anything that is not typically fondued? Like,
mouse.
You know, not. Did you?
No.
Oh, because I was going to be proud of you.
I'm not a boa constrictor.
You kind of crawl like one. But.
I think you have to have limbs to crawl. I think slither is the right word.
Slither, there you go.
Snakes.
Yeah, I'm apparently not a biologist. I'm not talking about like crackers or like basic things like that, like good crusty bread. Did they give you any options of stuff to fondue that maybe our four listeners wouldn't have associated with melted cheese?
I don't think so. I mean, having been there before, it's normally, you know, the cheese part of the meal is always like breads and carrots and apples. That's like that. And then you get into the meats. And then at the end, when you get to the chocolate, then you get angel food cake and brownies and strawberries and all that stuff. It's all good. It's all the usual stuff. But yeah, that's why I wanted to go. So it would have been more upsetting if it was a big a divergence from what it was in the past as opposed to what it normally is. So,
well, that's good. That's interesting. I am a little bit intrigued by this, and I'd have to find a fondue to partake in at some point in time. Meanwhile, Michigan hockey has a lot in common with the fondueing. They dunked Michigan State into cheese all weekend. So the first five minutes. Yes. Yes. So the first 5 minutes were like, so I talked to like one of my friends at the game and she was like, I mean, this should be an easy weekend, but she kind of had this semi-alarmed look on her face. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it's going to be okay. And she's like, all right, whatever. And so then the game starts in like the first 5 minutes, you know, it seemed like half of Michigan's defensemen had a defensive zone turnover that gave the Spartans a decent chance on net. And then they take a penalty and kind of score from just inside the dot. Sasana shoots a pretty open look that, I mean, Portillo should have made that save, right? I mean, you texted me like, was that as bad in person as it looked like on TV? And I was like, I thought it was kind of bad. And all of a sudden it's 1-0 and we're like, wow, maybe this won't be the weekend that we thought. But that was pretty much the end of it, as they about 6 minutes into the game, Michigan wakes up and realizes they have to play a hockey game. And it was away we go after that. You weren't at all concerned, per se, after the first 5 minutes, were you?
No, I mean, I was just kind of like, oh, this might be a closer game. But I don't know. I've seen the Michigan State play enough this year.
Spot them a couple and it's still okay. So one of the things that did wake Michigan up was Samo had a nice zone entrance and he gets taken down. And then pretty soon into that, I want to say less than a minute for sure, that Bortolo gets cross-checked and they call that penalty as well. So Michigan has a 5-on-3. And, you know, I believe it was the Notre Dame series where Michigan had that 5-on-3 and looked like they had absolutely no idea what they're doing. A week later, they get a 5-on-3 against Niagara. And, I mean, they score, but partially because Niagara decides to not really check anyone in front of the net at all. And so I think KJ had a pretty easy goal. But this time, they had a really interesting X setup. I think we talked about this before, but they had a guy in front, two guys below the goal lines, and then two guys sort of out inside of the dots. And I thought I really liked that. I liked it the first time they broke that out, and it looked really good again, including, I mean, you basically just put all the players for Michigan State in this case, but for your opponent have to basically spin in 360 degrees, which at some point it gets, you know, kind of tiring and disorienting as the puck can move literally anywhere. And Samo almost had I won't call it a wraparound because he's sitting right by the crease, but he pops up in front of the goal line, tries to stuff the puck in and DeRitter makes a really nice save. Cause I mean, you just sort of never know when that's happening cause you can't see back there. And they can reverse it back and forth, obviously. But then they get the really nice play from Bortolo as he kind of peels around and then passes a skip pass back across to the other side. And Beniers just buries it. And do you have any thoughts on that 5-on-3? Like, do you like that setup? Do you prefer something else? I thought it worked it well again.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. You know, what we talked about earlier this year was that 5-on-3s, you don't get a ton of them during the course of a year. So it's not something you really get to work on every day, but I didn't have any issues at all with this setup, and obviously it got him a goal. So
yeah, and it was nice to see Matty Beniers get one again. He scored the previous weekend, and he's kind of taken over that Brisson spot. I mean, Brisson will still get there, but he's not really scoring the way that he was before. And Beniers has been kind of pouring in those slap shots. And that's also something that we haven't seen a ton from him last year that we're seeing a lot more this year.
Well, I was looking at his stats this morning, and he's now up to 10 of his 18 goals have come on the power play this year. And a lot of them have been like that. I mean, that's the area of his game that has improved the most this season is those his slap shot and being able to use it as a major weapon on the power play.
The other thing that we should mention, I kind of broke it down into the first 5 minutes of, not worry, but I guess things that did not go the way that you would expect. And then the last 55 minutes where Michigan more or less dominates the game.
Yeah.
The one thing that they did not do well, that wasn't overly relevant because of their opponent, but I thought that they turned the puck over a little too much in their own zone. Owen Power, Luke Hughes, Truscott had one. Edwards had a couple of them that these guys just all sort of, I don't know if it's a mentality of, all right, I can skate by the guy in front of me, or I can deke a couple guys out because of the opponent, or if this was just a bad game for it, but they did turn the puck over a lot in their zone. Michigan hadn't really done that a lot this half of the season, giving away great chances. Not like it never happens, because it will from time to time, but I thought it was kind of pronounced, especially early in this game, in the first period for sure, stayed into the second period. By the third, they kind of gotten it out of their system, but
I thought the late second was kind of the worst segment of the game for that. After Michigan was up 3-1, like late in that period, there were a few really nice chances.
Yeah. It doesn't really concern me going forward because it was one game against an opponent that is so far inferior that it almost didn't matter what you did. And it hasn't been a trend. It was just sort of a one-off, but it was notable that, all right, well, that's something that, you know, if it happens again, you know, Mel's going to probably have a bit of a fit. So Michigan does eventually take the lead pretty early in the second period. Luke Hughes just kind of Kale McCarr's a guy at the blue line and breaks away and fires a puck in off the post. He's made, I want to say, at least three or four of his goals from sitting out by the blue line. And these aren't even like slap shots. These are almost like creating space and then just like firing the puck inside the post. I think that's a skill.
Well, certainly his ability to make space for him out of nowhere. Yes. Yeah.
The thing I get a little confused about sometimes in those situations is when you're shooting from that far away, like, is being able to just put it inside the post or, you know, around traffic or, you know, I guess part of it is using screens, right? If you have screens in front, you try to get the puck on net and hope you get it in a good spot the goalie can't see.
Yeah, I didn't love this goal allowed by Drew DeRitter. There were a lot of bodies, I think four in the vicinity, but when they showed the back angle, the four bodies didn't really affect the play that much. Like, they showed where DeRitter is. He had at least one eye on the play, and the puck is never deflected, and it goes wide of all of the bodies and then is tucked inside the post when it looked like DeRitter definitely had the space and the eyesight to see it. So not a big fan of that goal out, but that is the kind of play I would like to see more of this weekend, which we talked about last week in terms of just putting pucks on net with traffic in front.
I agree very much. That's something Michigan did struggle to do last weekend or two weekends ago, I guess, in this situation. And Michigan doubled their lead to 3-1, not too long after that, as Luke Morgan gets, I couldn't even really tell. Like, he was the first through like the high five line. So I was like, okay, this is probably his goal. And they gave it to him, but there's a loose puck that's in the slot that he sort of reaches out almost shuffleboard style and gets it up in the air. There was another Michigan State stick in the vicinity. And for some reason, Drew DeRitter had gone prone on the ice towards the slot where the puck was. And the puck just kind of takes this like change-up-y flutter over him and lands in the back of the net before somebody can come in and like try to whack it out. There's another defenseman that kind of came in from the side and was trying to clear it out. But at that point, there wasn't anything he could do. And I mean, if that's not a Luke Morgan goal, then can you please tell me what one would actually be?
So this one got reviewed. If you remember, they reviewed it for goaltender interference. I thought it was a good call to stick with the call on the ice because the netminder comes out of the crease to try and grab the puck when it's loose. And kind of before he can put the glove on it, it gets jarred free and there's no contact with him. And if there is, it's very little. And obviously it's a loose puck. And if he's diving on a loose puck, you still have the right to play the loose puck. And that's where any of the contact happens. There was no contact when he was in the crease. It was wrenched away from him while outside the crease. He made the decision to come out and then it went in. I agree with you. I don't know what exactly it went off of on its way in and who exactly was the last one to touch it. But I thought it was a good ruling by the referees to stay with the call on the ice. And after you get this goal, you're up 3-1. I mean, Michigan's blown some two goal leads this season, notably to Notre Dame in the fall, but given what we've seen from Michigan State, it never felt like that was really a possibility.
After that went in, I was like, this is done. Like, it's not because of randomness, but I mean, I just couldn't see. I mean, the first goal was kind of a gift from Portillo that like he would have to do that probably two more times. I mean, Michigan State was not probably going to beat him. I mean, if you remember to the game at LCA, you know, a couple of those goals were so goofy that, you know, it's hard to count on like plural of them happening. And so 3-1, and this is the area of the game where as the second period's winding down, you thought was kind of crazy. And it was, I had Lambert with a pretty bad DZTO and Edwards had one, Power had one, then Truscott. And it's just like one after another, like they're almost trying to keep Michigan State. You sure you're done? You know, it will give you a chance. You can hang around a little bit. No. And then, like, pretty much right into the third period, one of the sweetest goals from Mackey Samuskevich that we've seen this year. He's had a couple of laser shots that you like coming down the wing or getting set up with a one-timer. But this one was where he got in a two-on-one, I think it was with Duke, and just kind of picked the short side corner up over the goalie's shoulder. And, you know, I went down to talk to Zook and Peter, and I said, you know, that we, because we had engaged earlier about so many NHL goaltenders being, you know, 6'4", 6'6", or whatever now, or that's how you draft them. And obviously DeRitter is not compared to Portillo. And I said, you know, that's where you kind of want a goalie that's a lot bigger. And he just looked at me and says, it wouldn't have even mattered there. I mean, that's how good of a shot it was, just right up high. And that's sort of like one of Sammy or Samo's biggest traits, right? Is his just ability to snipe shots and pick corners.
Yeah. And it was doubly impressive because he really did not look like he was going to shoot it. He seemed to be looking past all the way. Sasana goes down to block it, which, by the way, very stupid turnover from Sasana, creates the whole play, leaves it behind his back, thinking Krieger's there. He's not at all, and it creates the two-on-one. But the defender was on the ice. The pass was taken away, and it just kind of looked like Samuskevich realized at the last moment, oh, got to shoot now, and then boom. And
well, okay.
Yeah. So, no, he is a great shooter. You know, hopefully if his career pans out the way he wants it to pan out, then he'll be scoring a lot of goals on assists from a lot of talented playmakers in the Florida Panthers. I mean, if you could speed up his development another year, he would fit right in with the sort of run and gun offense that the Panthers have in the NHL right now.
Did you see the Cole Krieger penalty on Brisson? It was sort of late in the third, but he kind of like grabbed his face and just like spun him around, and Brisson sort of lost control.
Yes. Well, one of the Kriegers was also involved in the scrum at the end of the game.
Yeah,
I did see that penalty, but I wrote more notes about the one in the last 50 seconds when he kind of threw Samuskevich down and then Duke starts pushing and then the whole.
Are the Kriegers the hockey versions of the Panishiks?
Maybe, but I don't think the Panishuk dad played in the NHL, whereas the Krieger dad did. So
okay,
they've got the hockey bloodline.
They also
know why they went to MSU, but
they also have like the intent to injure. I mean, I just thought that like head spin was, I mean, they called a couple other penalties, but that one was, I mean, that's as dangerous as it gets, isn't it? I mean, when you grab a guy by the head or neck, I mean, that's like a face mask in football.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought that even almost could have been a major, but it was just 2 minutes. Although at that point, it's 4-1 and we're all just like, all right, well, this is decided. Let's just get out of here. But then, like you said, there was a nice little scrum at the end where Dylan Duke gets ejected on his birthday.
Well, better than Danny DeKeyser, who just got waived by the Red Wings on his birthday.
Oh no. And he's been there forever.
Yeah.
I mean, they couldn't have waited a day.
No, and the reason is because they claimed Ollie Uolevi off waivers yesterday, and they needed to make room within 24 hours. So, bad luck.
Yeah. I don't really have anything else about this game. It was basically what it was in that, I mean, it was a couple minutes where you thought it might be a little bit closer, and then the next 55 where you realized maybe not so much.
Pretty much.
Going into Saturday's game, that was even shorter in doubt, I would say, as the first note is Bortolo's goal that he scores just a couple minutes into the game on just losing a guy at the blue line. It looks like it's going to be a 3-on-2, and it ends up being a 4v3, I think. And it looks like it's going to be a 3-on-3, and it ends up being a 3-on-2, and he just shoots the puck basically right through Drew DeRitter, who can see it coming from distance.
Yeah, the story of the second game is that Michigan State's goaltending was really bad. I mean, Michigan State as a team is quite bad, but everything, and this is a general rule in hockey, everything on your team looks a lot worse when every shot is going in the net. And that was the first 40 minutes of this game where they just did not get any saves from the goaltenders. And especially, you know, this goal from Bortolo as well as the next one from Pastashov. There's one from Beecher later on where it's like, okay, defensive zone coverage is not great, and Michigan State's playing a really bad gap, and they're giving a lot of space. But how many times are you going to get beat from a shot from like the top of the circle? Like, you got to make some saves, and they got zero saves in this game, and that's how you lose 8-0.
Yeah, the second one was the one that I was like, you know, Pasta was just inside the dot, so it wasn't a bad look. He's in the house, but I mean, if you have to put it in context too, like you're literally playing for your season right now, and you've already given up one bad goal, and this is a good, decent shot. It's shot inside the far post, but you know, if you're Michigan State, you're probably not getting 4, 5, 6 goals in this game. You're going to be stuck on 2 to 3. You can't give one up here on that particular shot.
Yeah, I mean, you need the goalie to bail you out a little bit. Drew DeRitter has generally done that this whole season, and he still gives up goals because he is facing too many shots. But yeah, in this one, we saw kind of what happens if, like, Jack Levy was Michigan State's goal.
Right.
They would lose a lot of games by a touchdown, and they did in this one.
And right after that, and this one wasn't as much DeRitter's fault, despite him being pulled after that. I don't think there's another move that Cole could have made, but this was a really nice play where Beecher enters the zone and he drops it to Blankenberg, who fills in right behind him, and Dylan Duke comes flying down the opposite side. Nobody picks him up. It's a 4-on-3. Great cross ice pass from Blankenberg. Duke buries it from the other side. There's really nothing DeRitter can do on that. It's 3-0. Now the game is definitely over, but the scoring for Michigan is not even close.
Yeah, this one was just really bad defensive zone coverage by MSU. I think this is when, because I was at Capitals Kraken on Saturday night, so I was not watching this game live, but I pulled out my phone and pulled up Twitter, and it was like 7 minutes in and it's already 3-0, and I'm like, oh boy.
So I've had a debate with another one of our listeners, a good friend of mine, who will always like tease me about like, hey, why don't you and Alex really tell us what you think about Michigan State? And I'm like, no, seriously, dude, like, this team is bad, like really, really bad. So I texted him, it was 3-0. And he responded, like, well, don't count your chickens. And I was like, 4-0, 5-0, 6-0, 7. I mean, it's just one after another, because this is just when Michigan State doesn't get very good goaltending, like you said, this is what happens. There's just nothing there. They have a couple of guys where you're like, all right, we can build off of it a little bit. But I mean, the depth here, and then they're going against, you know, Michigan, who's just one of the best teams in the country. So, you know, it's just a poor matchup all around. But I mean, the goaltending, like you said, and it didn't get better right away when they yanked DeRitter. They bring in Charlison and he fumbles a puck with a defenseman, and KJ gets sort of a layup open net goal.
Well, that one's a weird one because Krieger, it's basically a handoff, right, with the goalie and the defenseman. And it's kind of like if in football, the running back just doesn't move at all when the handoff's coming. Like, Krieger's there and Charlison is like, here you go. And he's still just standing there. And then he decides, I'm finally going to pick it up. And by that point, Johnson is caught up to him. But then also, Charlison just stands there like a statue after the handoff. I mean, he is way too late to get back in the net. Not even close to that. I mean, what? Just a really stupid play all around.
Yeah. And that just sort of summed up this game in a nutshell, where, I mean, KJ just gets an easy little dunk. And you know, that's sort of something that we'll talk about a little bit later when we talk about if there are any things to build on. But, you know, it'd been a while for KJ scoring. He made a nice move in the previous game, and stuff that you kind of are going to want to see going forward from him. Maybe getting a goal gets him, you know, off the schneid for a little while. And that's when sort of that brings us to the next sort of talking point of this game is you have a 2-on-1 for Beecher, and he comes in down the left wing and no one really picks him up. So he just kind of keeps going and going and going, walks in and scores 5-hole. And finally, Johnny Beecher has like scored a goal. It had been several months at this point, and he breaks his stick in celebration, which I don't think I've ever seen before. The crowd reacted pretty well to that. It was at that point, it was just a party, and it was good to get Beecher in the goal column.
Yeah, he hadn't scored since the UMass series right after the new year. So definitely a long time coming, and it was good for him to get that 500-pound silverback gorilla off his back. But again, I mean, it's just another story of like Michigan State giving up way too much space by being too easy to slice through in the neutral zone, not playing a tight gap at the blue line, but then also the goaltender not making a save on a shot that you want him to make a save on. You need a goaltender to come up with some stops somewhere, and didn't happen.
Yeah, you can't give up a lot of five-hole goals. I mean, it's one thing that no one picked him up, and he's shooting from about 4 feet in front of the crease. So he gets a little bit of slack there, but like at least make him go, you know, far side or something. But
yeah,
Michigan gets a major call against Michigan State. So Michigan gets the 5-minute major power play. And I don't know that I've seen a more efficient in terms of like volume and timing scoring that many goals. They ended up getting 3 on this power play.
Didn't remember the game between the Sharks and the Knights in Game 7 a few years back? Didn't the Sharks score 4 times on that 5-minute major?
Did they really? 4?
I don't remember that. Remember, they were down 3-0, and I think by the end of the 5-minute major, they were up 4-3.
That's insane.
But I'll look that up real quick, but that's the only other one that comes to mind.
Yeah, this is the one where, like, you're just, like, while I'm writing down goals and organizing notes, like, they just keep pouring in. And so it was 5-0 on the Beecher 2-on-1. And then Samuel actually, see, these are the things that, like, I really liked his redirect. And this is different than taking a shot, but Hughes hits him with a pass in the slot, and he doesn't even move his stick, just kind of changes the angle and redirects it high into the net. And it's a really nice sort of feel play with his hands just to kind of get the puck up in the air. And because that's not one where you really want to stop the pass and then shoot. Use the pass as momentum and redirect it. And it was really well done, I thought.
Yeah, the only goal I think is kind of notable on this 5-on-3 the 5-minute major is the second one, because the first one is a nice deflection. The last one is just a good shot. But second one I thought was kind of a little rough by the goaltending.
So this is Beecher's second, but it is a one-timer from Pasta, who goes from sort of low to high as he's below the goal line and hits up into inside the dot in the house area, and Beecher just shoots one by him.
The thing here is Triscott takes the initial shot. Charleston makes the save. He slides over to prepare to get the rebound from Pasterjov, but he slides way too far over, and he's basically leaving an empty net once Pasterjov makes the pass to Beecher, and Beecher then shoots from the slot, and that's just a case of swimming a little bit and pushing off way too much and leaving the net open for the opponent if they do anything other than the thing you're guessing they're going to do.
A slide too far?
Yes.
Yeah. And then you said the Blankenberg one, that was the 8th one. Made it 8-0, third on the 5-minute power play. And it was just a rifle. He's shooting again, other side of the house, coming down the right wing, and just buries it. And, I thought it was interesting that Michigan wasn't packing it in, right? Like, it's 5-0 before this power play, and they went hard at it. I think
that's a rivalry component too.
Yeah.
They might do that against Wisconsin, but I think there was some degree of a desire to just pound the opponent. Or basically, it's like, we're going to fire your head coach by scoring 3 on this 5-minute major. By the way, I looked it up. The Sharks did score 4 times on that 5-minute major.
That is, that's
the
crazy.
The 5-minute major was at 9:13 of the third period, and they scored at 9:20, 10:09, 12:53, and 13:21.
The only time I could think of 4 goals in a 5-minute span like that on a 5-minute major is Michigan State earlier this year, but 2 of the goals were for each team. So
right,
it's a little bit different with a net 0 outcome. The only other thing that I had of note from this game was that Jack Levy got in and
he didn't give up a goal.
He didn't. He made a save. He got to play 5+ minutes. Eric Portillo got his Swedish shutout, and it pretty much went about as well as it could in that Saturday game for Michigan. Everything that you would want to go right pretty much did.
the teams that are number one and number two in the country in pairwise entering this weekend both played best two out of three series. Minnesota State played number 59 St. Thomas. Oof. And one of their two games was a lot closer than these two.
Yes, that was, I mean, it was 3-2, I think, at one point, right?
Thomas led 2-1 entering the third period of game one, and then they lost 3-2. So tells you all you need to know about Michigan State.
Is they're at the level of St. Thomas.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458. Or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Things I was kind of thinking about, because I had talked to a couple people in the press box about this too, was, you know, is it better? Obviously you want home ice, and so if you get home ice then you don't play this weekend, but from a hockey perspective, is it better to play this series even if it's against Michigan State, so that, you know, you basically don't skip like 2 weeks, you know, of playing in any games, and then you play one game, and if you'd win the semifinal then you go in the final, you play one game in 3 weeks. Is it better, do you think, as a hockey team to have played in a series like this even if it is Michigan State?
I don't know. College hockey has some of these breaks. I mean, I don't think it really affected Michigan in 2018 when they didn't play in the finals of the Big Ten tournament and then played the next weekend in the NCAAs. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
I don't know. It gave them an opportunity, like we said last week, to sharpen up the power play, but
that they did.
So they got Jack Leafy a chance to play.
So I had a couple of things written down as sort of takeaways. We sort of sprinkled them in and talked about them. I thought we'd a little bit in depth just to kind of hammer these in as like more, real positives from this weekend. But one was, you know, Beecher getting the goal. And, you know, we talked a little bit on the MGO podcast segment about how, you know, just getting that monkey off your back is kind of a big deal emotionally and mentally, because, you know, Beecher's been having a strong second half. And Duke and Samuskevich both been playing well. Then Beecher puts in a couple of goals. All of a sudden, like, there's an argument that could, going into sort of elimination hockey, as we're calling it, could be maybe Michigan's most consistent line.
It's definitely the one that will be worth watching this weekend in terms of a line that has the mix of finishing ability and the ability to kind of play a rougher game. Mm-hmm. And perhaps cycle through a really tough Notre Dame defense in that zone. So, yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of that line, and they've been kept together now for what, 6 weeks, something like that, since the Olympians left. I mean, that group's been pretty coherent and they're playing well. So happy for them. I mean, my number one takeaway from the weekend is if you score 8 goals, you generally win. And I think it's a good idea to keep scoring 8 goals.
I can see why people listen to our podcast. It's clearly for the analysis. So the other thing is, you know, Kent Johnson got a goal. He hadn't scored in a little while. He also made a really nice move coming off the boards and losing a guy, getting into the slot and shooting. And he didn't score on the shot, but it was, I wrote down that was maybe his best move I've seen him make in quite a while. And, you know, he's been a guy who was a top five pick. You can see, like, the stick handling and the passing ability, you know, just oozes out of him. But he probably hasn't had, like, the consistent on-ice impact, like, shift after shift that maybe we expected. Perhaps, you know, a couple of moves like that, maybe getting a puck in the net will get him going a little bit.
It's the hope. He hasn't scored a lot of goals this year, period. I mean, you look at his numbers, he's got a ton of assists, and he's at, what, seven goals right now?
He's at six or seven, yeah.
Yeah, so there's still, I think, to me, some degree of question about the top six and trying to get those guys going, because this was a weekend with a lot of goals, but the Beniers and Johnson line didn't produce a ton of them.
No. And, you know, I wrote on Friday that I thought Thomas Borlo had one of his better games of the year. He had a really nice pass. I don't think he scored a goal, but he contributed in other ways. And he had a number of like good chances. And, you know, it's not always just scoring the goal, because, you know, you have to be able to put yourself in chances to get it. And in order for those goals to come. And then there's other ways that you can make impacts and, you know, passing the puck and getting other guys chances. I thought he did really well. And you know, and then Morgan gets a goal, and he another guy who's super gritty, who is going to be kind of big in this game against Notre Dame coming up, just because, again, he's really fast. He can create space. He goes into corners. He goes in net front. You know, he got one in against Michigan State. Not a guy that scores a ton, but, you know, kind of a rink rat, right, is what they call it in hockey.
Well, yeah, and my number two takeaway, much more serious than the number one takeaway, also has to do with someone who is Morgan's same age. And that's, I didn't realize this until last night / this morning when I was looking at the stats, but Mike Pasta has had a really nice season when you look at his numbers. He's already at a career high in goals, assists, and points. And, you know, he's a veteran guy. He leads the team in the locker room and is the only one. He's Morgan's same age. Actually, Morgan is older than him because Morgan played the year in Lake State. But those are the only two guys that are on the roster that were on the Frozen Four team. And because Morgan sat out that year with the transfer year, Mike is the only guy that actually played in the Frozen Four. So that's valuable experience. And you look at him, right? 10 goals, 14 assists, 24 points in 37 games. And I think he's one of Michigan's best defensive forwards. So that's a really nice final year for him, because he was a guy that could just never really get kind of into that solidified top nine spot, right? In the past, he would only play 20, 25 games and he'd be scratched some and just wasn't super consistent, but kind of like his brother, right? Remember? Final year was really strong relative to his preceding career, and Mike the same way.
Yeah, and the bummer for Mike Pasta is the Cicchellini injury, I think, kind of changed some things, because we thought that he was going to be put on one of those pairings with either, you know, Bortolo and Brisson or Beniers and KJ, and Pasta maybe gets the other spot, but Pasta's been moved around a lot. And then with like people coming in and out of the lineup, he's never really had a consistent line. Like, you know, it's one of the first things that we always do when we get to Yost, or, you know, we check Twitter when Christy posts it, but is, you know, look at the lines, and he's one of the guys that you look for. Where are they putting Pasta this week? Because it's not, he hasn't had a home kind of all year. And when you can sort of produce like that, you know, that says something about you being able to fit in wherever they place you.
Here's a trivia question for you. Can you name the only three players on the Michigan team who have played in every game this season?
Oh, I was just looking at it. That is a really interesting question. Every game, I would probably have to say Truscott. Well, one is Portillo. Right.
One is Portillo.
Yeah. Okay. I don't remember Truscott being scratched.
Truscott is not one of them.
He is not.
He has played. He played. There were two games he did not play in. He did not play, let's see, against UMass. Oh. He played every other game, but he did not play either game against UMass.
Maybe he. Okay. I guess Pasta's probably one.
He is one. And there's one more Portillo. You're missing. Portillo. And then there's one more.
I guess it would be Dylan Duke.
No, Dylan Duke
really
has played 36, but not 37 games.
Oh.
Let me see which one he missed.
What game would he?
He did not play against Duluth.
Oh, well. Okay. who's the third one then?
Garrett Van Y.
Oh, yes, of course. I forgot about the fourth line.
Yep.
Yeah, that, I guess that, yeah, because Moyle has been, like, he's been sad a number of times for probably multiple reasons. But yeah, Van Y has been, yeah.
Pasichov, Van Y, and Portillo have played all 37. Hughes and Duke have played 36. Samo and Trescott have played 35. Lambert and Morgan have played 34. And then it goes down from there.
Well, I mean, that's not too bad, especially considering how many people that they've had to go in and out of the lineups for a bunch of reasons, let alone, you know, obviously on top of COVID. And then, you know, you look at like the juniors, the Olympics, and you just had seemingly infinite shuffling all year, which has been kind of frustrating because this is a team we've sort of been looking forward to. And it's been a lot of times, you know, playing with a short deck a little bit.
Well, if Michigan was bad, they would probably have the team more often, right? When you have good players, then other people want those players. So it's kind of a trade-off. One more note, Luke Hughes scored goal number 17 this weekend. That is now the second highest single season goal scoring season for a defenseman in Michigan history, behind only Steve Richman, who was a junior and had 22 goals in 1981. But Hughes passed Jack Johnson's 07 season with 17. He's also now up to 36 points on the season. Has already blown way past Quinn Hughes as a freshman, and also past Quinn Hughes this weekend as a sophomore, who had 34 his second season. And we'll see how much farther Luke can climb. But if he can get into the 40s, you know, he already has the freshman record, but that would get into the top 10 all time single season points total, depending on how far into the 40s he could get. But history being made there.
Any other takeaways that you noted from this weekend other than scoring lots of goals and playing in lots of games?
Not really. I do actually have one. We talked about this earlier in the season, but one of my hot take predictions in the season preview was Portillo having a higher save percentage than Strausman last year. It's now really close. Man's save percentage last season was .930, and Portillo's is now up to .929 after allowing one goal in 116 minutes this weekend, 113 minutes.
Yeah, he had a really nice game on Friday. We didn't really talk about it last segment because, again, the goaltending is not the first thing that usually comes out for Michigan when they play Michigan State. But, he's had bad moments in games, but he hasn't really had too many bad games overall. Like, you can sit there and say, oh, I'd like his rebound control to be a little more consistent, or, you know, sometimes he loses the puck and can't move his, you know, big frame around or whatever, but like he doesn't give up bad goals plural in a game very often.
No. And you know, the Friday game was kind of a classic example of the nature of goaltending, where he gives up a really bad goal, but if we were building an expected goals model, probably comes out positive for the game because he made a lot of other saves. So it kind of evens out and then some in that scenario. It'll be interesting. We can talk about postseason awards because I did send you the Freddies from Fred Pletch and the Friday broadcast.
What? All right. So if you did this, what would they be called? The Drano Awards?
Like, no,
what?
Definitely not that.
The Alexas?
I don't know. There isn't a good one. My mom specifically gave me a name so it wouldn't be easy to add a Y or an IE nickname to. So hard for naming awards.
The Owls? The Owls. That's what it is.
But the Freddies that were shown on the broadcast on Friday night, Portillo was his goalie of the year, and Jakub Dobish was his honorable mention. And that'll be an interesting one because Dobish is now frozen at .934 for the regular season, can't play any more games, 2.26 goals against average. Portillo at .929 with a 2.06 goals against average. So it'll be interesting, I think, to see which way the Big Ten media voters go on goalie of the year. I'm impartial to the team that does better getting the awards just in general, but Dobish was really good, and he was a big reason why Ohio State improved a lot this season, so I wouldn't be angry if they give it to him. But Portillo's built himself quite a case for that award, especially in the second half of this season when he's been so locked down.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Are you at all concerned about maybe Owen Power and Brendan Brisson?
What about
it? I mean, well, Power hasn't been great the last couple weekends. We've made some notes of that last weekend. He was a little bit similar this weekend in the sense that he probably had as many bad defensive zone turnovers as anyone else on the team. And Brisson wasn't really anywhere to be found for the most part on the weekend. And, you know, that's kind of, again, a couple weekends in a row going into, again, elimination hockey, a team that's probably going to be a little more physical, not really a style that either of those players generally like to play. You know, is that something that Michigan is a little concerned of going forward, or is that just a bad weekend or two?
Yeah, Brisson, I'm not too worried about because the shot will always be there. And hopefully it just opens up a little bit and he gets more chances. Power, I don't know. He has not looked as good, but I've been down on Power relative to other people. This season, I'm more of a Hughes fan there, but
I agree.
I don't know. We'll see. I think the whole team is going to have to kind of look at themselves and reevaluate things as we go into this next weekend with a chance to kind of rid themselves of some of the old tendencies that have hurt them against Notre Dame.
Because we've seen them do it in a number of situations, and we've seen them play well against good teams. It's not like they're incapable of it. We've seen them not turn it over. We've seen them not give up odd man rushes. We've seen them take good care of the puck in the offensive zone, create chances, all the things that you want to see from a super talented team. And it's time to, like you said, look yourself in the mirror and say, what kind of legacy do we want to leave? You know, we have a few more games left. We have a couple of tournaments that we can easily win because they're certainly good enough. But what kind of attention to detail are we going to pay in some of these situations that, you know, we've given away some goals in some games in the past?
You're right. One more milestone note I forgot to throw out there. With the two wins this weekend, Michigan hockey is now up to 27 wins on the season, which is the most of any Michigan team since 2011, when they finished with 29 en route to the national championship game.
All right. Well, there were other games in the Big Ten as well this weekend. We talked about across the board in the Big Ten that the lower seeds may not win a game. But then the sport of hockey reared its head again, and the lower seeded teams that were not Michigan State actually performed quite well, as Penn State did beat Ohio State despite dropping the Friday game. And Wisconsin won the Friday game 3-1 without an empty net goal and had really good chances on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, Notre Dame starting with that one. I mean, the Friday game, you look at the shot total, that was just them getting goalied again, which happened only like a month ago to Wisconsin. I don't know what the story is with that, but and then, yeah, Wisconsin hung tough with them. They played some really competitive games. Those last two, Wisconsin hung around, but that's kind of how Notre Dame is, right? They play a
lot of tight
low
games.
Event style, and the nature of that is that you get in close games, and close games mean bounces can happen, and, you know, just kind of how it goes. I'm much more interested in the Ohio State series because that has pretty big implications for both this tournament and the NCAAs. I mean, number one, Minnesota now gets to play Penn State, which is a much easier path. Probably they handled Ohio State pretty well too, not that long ago, but probably easier path to the title game. We saw Penn State try to beat Minnesota a little ways ago and didn't go very well. Maybe it'll happen this time, but I'm not putting any faith in Penn State again. Many times, but secondly, because of that series, Ohio State is now in the danger zone. They are down to 15th in pairwise, which we'll get into at some point, maybe now. But that means they are very much not safe. And the Big Ten is a four-bid league. Might not happen this year. We'll see. But one note on Ohio State before we get into the tournament stuff. Back to the Freddies thing.
This is your thing.
This is why I brought it up in the first place. His Big Ten honorable mention for coach of the year was Steve Rolick. And I will very much not be happy if he wins coach of the year. I would give it to Bob Motzko. I think he did a great job. He won the regular season title with a less talented roster than Michigan. So I have no problem with him getting the award, which is who the real Freddie gave, was given to. But the honorable mention to Rolick, Lord almighty. I mean, look, the whole idea of you surpass expectations, there are times when that's applicable. When Barry Trotz came into the Islanders right after they had lost John Tavares and everyone left them for dead and then they made the playoffs. Sure, those circumstances. But you can't get credit for surpassing expectations when the expectations were low because you sucked the previous year. Like, it just can.
They also finished fourth in the conference.
Yeah, like...
Of seven teams.
Oh, you beat expectations. Well, Steve, why were the expectations low? Maybe because your team was really bad because of all the players you recruited and coached and were rewarding him, hypothetically, for not getting back to the level he was just at a few years ago, right? Like, this is not... Like, 2018, 19, 20, Ohio State was a Frozen Four contender. They might not even make the tournament this year. And
that's coach of the year.
And that's coach of the year. I mean, come on. Come on.
I mean, I would rather have it go to Jeff Jackson in that sense, because at least they're going to be in the tournament. And he did beat Michigan a number of times, who is arguably the best team in the country. And then, you know, they gave Minnesota a headache in a couple games too. So it's not like, and he beat Ohio State. Like,
right.
Even in the standings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you said the whole thing is like you give it to the coach that ends up having the best upgrade in goaltending. And, you know, is it really the coach or did he just get someone to keep pucks out of the net?
Pretty much the latter in most all cases.
And that's really the difference in that Ohio State team from last year to this year, for the most part, is last year they had bad goaltending and Michigan caved them in a number of times. And if they don't have Dobish this year and they have, okay, maybe not Jack Levy, but
if they have Oscar Audio, they're not
probably getting caved in.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I, but that's, you know, the Big Ten for you. I mean, I, that's why we need, that's why we need the Owls. yeah, I didn't really see any of that series. I was more focused on Notre Dame, Wisconsin for obvious reasons. You know, Penn State did come back. I thought that was interesting that they came back after losing the Friday game and winning two games, especially winning a game three, because I don't think you see that a whole lot in these situations.
And they won at low scoring, too.
It was like 3-2, right?
I thought it was 2-1.
2-1. Well, there you go.
Yeah, it was 2-1. They won 3-2 and 2-1.
Okay,
3-2. They don't see that very often from them, but. Liam Soulier, by the way, was the goalie on Sunday. So,
on Sunday, did he play either of the earlier games? I mean, that's pretty ballsy to bring in your backup and, hey, go win us a season-saving game.
Let's see. Soulier started all three games.
Interesting. Okay. Well, good for him, I guess.
Yeah.
I assume he'll probably play on Saturday then against Minnesota.
You have to.
Yeah.
I mean, his numbers are better. He's got a 906 versus Audio's 893. I'm not sure if Soulier was injured, but that would be a reasonable explanation. I mean, if they come out and they play the way they did against Minnesota when they went up 3-0 in that other game, and Soulier is the goalie and he plays better, they can totally win that game. It's just a matter of actually getting back to a point where you're up 3-0 in Minnesota again. That's not going to happen very often.
Yeah, and it's not in Hockey Valley this time either. So, all right, well, we'll move on to the pairwise section of our hockey cast. You brought up some interesting numbers. First of all, we should say Michigan is what, 0.0017 behind Minnesota State, which is
in RPI.
In RPI, which is catchable. Like, that's not a no-go situation. If Minnesota State were to lose, Michigan could easily pass them. I think I would also guess that if Michigan beats Notre Dame and then beats Wisconsin, they probably also pass them because those are two quality wins.
So College Hockey News published the probability matrix. It might have been published already, but I just found it today, either because it was just published or I just don't know where to look for it. But it was updated last night, so it's all up to date. And it gives you basically what are the probabilities that each team finishes what spot in the pairwise rankings. And Michigan and Minnesota State, first off, notable, are already locked in to a one seed.
Yeah.
They both have a 0% probability of being number four or anything below that.
Yeah.
They also have a very low probability of being number three. Minnesota State is at 2% and Michigan's at 1%. So that's basically like you lose your game this weekend and then every other possible permutation comes to fruition to bump you out. So all things considered, highly likely that those are your one and your two seeds. What's also interesting is that we don't know really which one will be which. For the one seed, it's 51% chance Minnesota State, 48% chance Michigan. And then for the two seed, 46% chance Minnesota State, 50% Michigan. So they're going to be one and two in most all circumstances. And it's basically a coin flip as to who is what. I think that for Michigan to get that one seed, number one, you want them to win the Big Ten tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Probably want them to play Minnesota, even though obviously it'll be easier to win a banner if you get to play Penn State. But for pairwise purposes, you would want to beat Minnesota. I think that would be part of it. And then number one, you're cheering for Minnesota State to lose to Northern Michigan this weekend. They're playing Northern in the semis of the CCHA. You also want Michigan Tech, our bitter rivals, to lose to
your personal bitter rival.
My personal bitter rival. to lose to Bemidji State, because that lowers the quality of competition for Minnesota State hypothetically the next weekend, right? Even if they were. Yeah, that's what I would say. Or you can cheer for Michigan Tech, but the hope they then beat Minnesota State, either one. But you would want Michigan Tech to lose a game, and if they don't lose a game, you want them to not play the better team, and then you want Michigan to win the Big Ten while playing the meteor path. I mean, they're already going to have a meteor path because they're playing Notre Dame, who's number eight in the pairwise. So those two are very close to each other, and I'm not exactly sure which is kind of obviously more preferable, and the reason is, while you do get to play the Atlantic Hockey team, there are some interesting teams in that 8-9 range. Like right now, you might have to play a Quinnipiac or a Notre Dame or someone like that there, where if you're in the 2 slot, maybe you get St. Cloud. I mean, there's a lot of scenarios there, but those are things to keep in mind.
You know, it's not gospel going like when you go down the line and you get 1-16 and 8-9 because of interconference matchups. And, you know, they also to some extent do try to get as local of teams as possible, despite having the worst regional spots ever. It's pretty much at this point a given that regardless of where they finish 1 and 2, that Minnesota State is going to go to Loveland and Michigan is going to go to Allentown. I would think those are all but set in stone. The thing that does kind of worry me is that I could see them also sending Notre Dame to Allentown because that is quote unquote close.
Yeah. So the other things with pairwise right now, just to throw out there, the other one seeds, Denver and Minnesota, still hold the inside tracks there. The thing to watch for is the NCHC tournament, which is just kicking off this weekend, because you've got a lot of teams right there from 3 to 9 plus Duluth at 11. But Duluth's chance of getting to the one slot is not very high. But the teams there are Denver, Western, North Dakota, and St. Cloud. And all of those teams, in theory, could jump up to the one line. A little bit harder for St. Cloud, but right now, it feels like the last two one seeds are going to be some combination of Denver, Minnesota, Western Michigan, and North Dakota, depending on what happens in the NCHC tournament. And of those teams, whoever doesn't get the one seed are probably drawn into the region that those one seeds would be in, right? So those teams, unless Western takes a tumble, which I could see happening, are probably going to be not in Michigan's region. Whereas we look at the teams in the 7 to 10-ish range, And the teams most likely to appear there are Quinnipiac at 74% to finish between 7 and 10. Notre Dame, 79%. St. Cloud, 77%. Those three teams highly likely to be in the 7 to 10 range. And then on opposite end of that range, obviously Western and NODAC on the front side, and then Tech, Duluth, and maybe UMass on the backside. But we're looking at those three, Quinnipiac, Notre Dame, and St. Cloud, would likely be right in that 2 to 3 seed range in a hypothetical Michigan regional. Now, the hope, of course, is that they would send Notre Dame, because of interconference matchups, to Minnesota State.
Yeah, I think, you know, the ideal 2-3 that Michigan wants there is probably some combination of St. Cloud, Quinnipiac, Michigan Tech, and UMass. I mean, I don't, you know, the thing about Minnesota Duluth in there too, I have zero interest. And it, I mean, they could be icing a bunch of
Minnesota Duluth,
actual Bulldogs, and I would be like, they'll find a way to score in overtime. So
Duluth has a +5 goal differential this year.
Yeah, and Michigan ran them out of the building.
They're 15-13-4. I mean, they're not a very scary team other than the name.
Sometimes the house is haunted, man.
Something like that.
I still, you know, Michigan matched up against Tech, and, you know, they had no one on the ice for that game. And, you know, they just couldn't, no one could finish a shot for Michigan. And I feel like you add in all of those players who were gone, and you have a little bit of, you know, the controversy brewing, and then all of a sudden maybe Michigan's motivated. I don't mind that matchup quite as much. St. Cloud is more just, hey, you know what? They're not Western, and we've seen Western. Also, North Dakota comes with a pretty strong record, but also, you know, a tournament presence over the last forever. And
yeah, I don't know
the last time Michigan has beaten North Dakota. Well, they did beat him in that crazy Hunwick game, but aside from that, I mean, it's probably been going back to the late 90s.
Yeah, I'm in the let's not see North Dakota camp, but we're probably not going to see them because of what we mentioned a few minutes ago until
four.
They're probably not in Michigan's regional. But North Dakota, they've got plenty of talent, and they're my pick to win the NCHC tournament. They are playing really well down the stretch. They've won 7 of their last 8. And if you count shootouts as a win, which I normally don't, but I am for this purpose,
that's my narrative.
10 of the last 12. Interestingly, the only team to beat them in that period is Omaha, who beat them twice. But in that stretch, they went, you know, they beat St. Cloud, then they beat him again in overtime shootout. Then they beat Duluth twice. They beat Western Michigan twice. I mean, North Dakota is scorching hot right now. They're not a team I want to see, but if they play as well as they've been playing recently in the tournament, they're not going to be in Michigan's region. So they'll probably be a 1 seed, or if not, they'll be the first 2 seed. So I'm not as worried about them. St. Cloud, they're a tough one because they're just kind of the classic, well, pretty mediocre team in a really good league. They went 9-8-7, 7 overtime games in NCHC play.
So they're the Notre Dame of the NCHC?
Basically, more or less. And yeah, your point about Tech, we saw them. They seemed fine. Michigan didn't play with any players and managed to tie them. So, okay. Quinnipiac, I'm the chief Quinnipiac disrespecter. They also haven't played very well as of late. They're 3-3 in their last 6, with those 3 losses coming to Cornell, Harvard, and Clarkson, and they scored 1 total goal in those 3 games. They only gave up 5, but they scored 1 with 2 1-0 losses. So I say send me Quinnipiac.
The problem is that you have the East and the Northeast Regional, and the odds of Quinnipiac going to the Northeast Regional or the East Regional are probably really high because everyone else is going to be on a plane.
Yeah. The thing about Quinnipiac, and this transitions the other part about pairwise, looking at the 4 seed possibilities, they're the team to watch if you don't want Ohio State to make the tournament. Because if you don't want Ohio State to make the tournament, the best way for that to happen is for Quinnipiac to not win the ECAC title. If they don't win the ECAC title, someone else will. If that team is Clarkson, they could
play. If that team is anyone, it doesn't matter. They're going to take the 15th seed.
Yes. Unless Clarkson, they have like a 15% chance of playing into the like 12 to 14 range where they wouldn't even need the AQ technically. But that would be another team entering the picture who would bump Ohio State out.
Right.
But if anyone, right, pulls the upset there, that's bad news for Ohio State. And there's plenty of chance that could happen because the quarterfinals for the ECAC tournament is a 3 out of 5. That's this coming weekend. QPAC is playing St. Lawrence. They'll probably win that one. But the next weekend, it's single elimination, semifinals and finals. And they have not beaten Clarkson or Cornell this season. And those are the likely quarterfinal and final, or sorry, semifinal and final matchups for Quinnipiac. So maybe they exercise the demons, but that's a team that's pretty vulnerable going into the ECAC tournament. You could also see craziness happen in the CCHA if Minnesota State were to lose to Northern and then maybe someone beats Tech, right? Bemidji beats Tech, Northern beats Minnesota State, chaos reigns. That one would pretty much bump Ohio State out. And then Omaha is the other one. Not really likely that they would actually win that tournament, but if Omaha, let's say, takes its series against Western this weekend, and then let's say they beat Denver the next weekend, even if they lose to Nodak or Duluth in the final, they probably have won enough games to jump from wherever they are right 18th to 15th. So those are the possibilities that could bump Ohio State out of the picture.
The teams that I think Michigan generally wants to avoid, which I would say are ironically the two teams that they got in 2018 and beat them both, so maybe I know nothing, is Northeastern, who is sitting at 14th right now just because their goalie is pretty well-renowned, and that just leads you into a situation of getting potentially goalied. And then you have BU that's sitting at 16, so right now they're on the outside looking in with the automatic qualifier from the Atlantic. But BU generally loaded with talent, and you know they were the 4 seed that beat the 1 when Michigan as the 2 faced them in the round of 8 in 2018, and Michigan did win that game, but they did have some trouble with, I believe it was a Jordan Greenway, I think.
The calendar has changed. It's not 2018 anymore. These rosters are pretty different.
Yes, thanks for the dates update.
I was going to try to put on my Boston accent and do the Rick Pitino, you know.
Boston?
Yeah, Brady Tkachuk's not walking through that door. but Boston U still has some talent, and Northeastern, as you mentioned, has a really good goalie in Devon Levi. Last time we saw them, they had a really good team, right? They had Caden Primo in net, who's now really bad for the Canadians, but he at least is in the NHL, which says a lot. And they also had the Hobie winner, right?
That was Adam, that top line.
Yeah,
that
Adam Gaudette, really Dylan Sakura, and the other guy. I don't remember who the other guy was, but a little bit different this time around. We should note that because of sort of what's going on in the bubble, where you have 3 Hockey East teams. Chaos reigned out East this weekend. UMass needed 1 point, I believe, to win the Hockey East title outright against Boston College, who's really bad this year, and they didn't get any points. So they shared the title with Northeastern, who won their game with like 12 seconds to go. So kind of craziness out there. UMass tumbled down the board. Remember, we were talking about them as a potential 2 seed team, and now they're down at 12. The good news is they can't fall much farther, according to this matrix. They're still almost a lock, I think, at 98% to get in. So they're probably in, but now they're more in that 4 seed range, and Michigan might not see them as a result. Northeastern's right there. UMass Lowell is right there. Boston U is at 16, waiting to jump up if they can win some games in the Hockey East tournament. Providence is a little more of a long shot. Merrimack and UConn also more of long shots. Pretty much have to get the AQ slot to get in, but very feasible that they could. So a lot of chaos out there. And
I think that's the big thing for Michigan, is that if you get 2 automatic qualifiers, like if you get the Atlantic and then you get one of the teams from the CCHA, or you get some rando winning like Hockey East or something, or you know what? Well, I mean, it wouldn't matter with Penn State because they wouldn't do an interconference matchup. But that's the best option for Michigan because they're not going to be facing the 14th or 13th team in the nation, they're going to be facing 15 or 16. And we know 16 is going to probably go to the Atlantic. If 15 can go to anyone else, then that's probably who Michigan's going to draw, save probably Penn State.
Yeah, well, I mean, right now you're looking at Michigan is going to be a one or a two, if they're one or two overall. If they're one overall, they're going to get
American or whoever beat American
or Mercyhurst or Bentley, Holy Cross, any of those teams.
And well, if Bentley's already taken down Ohio State, so
yeah, something Michigan didn't do. Oh, wait. Number two, if they're number two overall, then they're going to play either an automatic qualifier out of the ECAC, say Clarkson, or out of a different league, or they're probably going to play a Hockey East team, right? That's who's all on the bubble, unless the committee goes wild and puts Ohio State in with Michigan, which they normally don't do. So seems pretty unlikely that would happen. But and if you're playing a Hockey East team, you're probably favored because Northeastern and Lowell are about the same level as UMass. And we saw Michigan hit UMass with a sledgehammer back in January. So
and UMass did that despite having a good goalie. Like they're like Murray, their goalie played well. I mean, Michigan beat them down and I was impressed with the way their goalie played for the most part too. So Michigan did overcome sort of that rough situation where you're talking about getting to face a hot goalie and then being like, oh man, one game. But you know, they did handle it earlier this year against a very similar team.
Yeah. So I think the what you want to have happen in overall is probably to have Northeastern win that conference tournament so they're not Michigan's four seed, and then have an ECAC team, not Quinnipiac, win that tournament, and that's who Michigan draws. And I think if in an ideal world, you would want Michigan's bracket to be either an ECAC automatic qualifier or the Atlantic Hockey automatic qualifier as the four, and then probably St. Cloud and Tech.
Yeah.
As your two and three.
Yeah, or UMass, if UMass can win a couple games and slide up. But yes, I agree. Those are probably the three best hopes for the two and the three in Michigan's region.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, this weekend is big in the Big Ten. It's also big in the CCHA. It's not as big in the other leagues because they're only in their quarterfinals and the matchup's a little more lopsided there. But less than 2 weeks to Selection Sunday, so we're coming down the home stretch, and this weekend will bring a lot of things into focus in terms of getting to see what Michigan does against Notre Dame, who they're playing in the Big Ten tournament finals if they were to beat Notre Dame, as well as what are the stakes in the other conferences, what does the pairwise look like now. So it'll be a much clearer picture next weekend, I think, a lot less variability in the probabilities.
We'll just run through a few things this weekend. The big thing of note is that both games are on Big Ten Network. So you can have the Michigan will be playing at 6:30. And if they are able to beat Notre Dame, they will face either Penn State or Minnesota, which will be played at 9. So if Michigan does beat Notre Dame, you can come home, watch that game, see a preview as to who Michigan's Big Ten final opponent would be. You know, Notre Dame is basically the same team they were a couple weeks ago when we faced them, aside from the fact that they're struggling with Wisconsin for whatever reason. We know they're strong and special teams, have probably the best penalty kill in the nation. They do have a lot of good drafted skaters, but not one or two stars overall. I would say Landon Slaggart and Max Ellis are probably their two most lethal scoring threats. They've gotten really good goaltending. You know, Goleta's got a 1.98 and a 9.30 save percentage. I mean, you're just not probably going to get a lot of goals in that series. You know, we talked about that with being physical in front of the net and getting a couple greasy goals could go a long way. But, you know, it's just Notre Dame. And Jackson is as good a coach as there is. He's had Michigan's number plenty of times over the years, even going back to the Red Era. You know, this is a game where Michigan's talent needs to show up and you need to be the better, smarter, stronger, faster team on the ice, which you can be. But this is the time to show it because Notre Dame, we've seen their system. It works. They usually execute it to like a very high level. And you're going to need that extra bit of skill and speed and just ability to get, you know, one goal. It's one game playoff. Anything can happen, and that's where Michigan can have their edge.
Yeah, I mean, same kind of story as always with Notre Dame. You want to score first, and if Michigan is able to do that, we want to see them play better defense. You can't make mistakes, and you don't want to play Notre Dame's game. You don't want to find yourself trailing when the game is halfway done, because at that point, Notre Dame can really start shifting into a defensive mode. I want to see Michigan play more in the middle of the ice, try to bully their way more around the net, not just skate around the perimeter, take more shots. And again, the special teams is the big matchup. Can Michigan's power play crack that impenetrable Notre Dame penalty kill, right? The first power play Michigan gets in this game will be very telling in terms of where the game is headed.
And at some point, you got to get a break against this team. 0-4 on the year. I mean, I know two of those were overtimes, but at some point, you've got to get the bounce. They can't play perfect in every game. They've played really, really well in about three of the games against Michigan. At some point, the puck's going to go in for you.
Pretty much. And Michigan was in a spot like this a number of years ago where they were 0-4 against a team, and then they went to 0-5. That was not very fun. Hopefully, they finally scratch out a win. It's kind of weird, but this is the first time Michigan is playing in the official second weekend of the Big Ten tournament since 2017-2018, because last year you had a condensed tournament. Michigan did make the semis, but the semis was the next day as opposed to much later, and they were scheduled to play in the semis 2 years ago. That never happened. So
been this a is also while. The first time they've hosted it.
Yes, too. Been a little while since we've been here, but you got to think the guys will be fired up to play a team that has really had your number, and we'll see if they can finally get their revenge. Listening to Michigan HockeyCast 4.19 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Come back next week where there will be more pairwise probabilities. Only 1 week to go until Selection Sunday. At that point,